What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hello and welcome to Stories from the Bunker, the weekly podcast where we discuss all things weird and wonderful, strange and supernatural.
Oh, yes. Ooh.
I like it. I mean, it might have been slightly different to last week, but still good.
As always, I'm joined by Martin.
Hi, how's it going?
Fine, thank you, Martin. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good, considering I've got only had a few hours sleep last night. I think I'm just pepped up on coffee.
That's the way to go. It's the way to live. And Alex.
Hello there.
Excuse me.
How dare you interrupt Alex, Martin? How dare you?
I'm doing my prequels line. Hello there, Robin. How's it going? Are you all right?
I'm doing well. I'm looking forward to this week's topics because you've got a really exciting thing to discuss, haven't you?
I do, yes. I think the last time I spoke about a legacy topic, it was the mass UFO sighting over LA.
The Battle for Los Angeles.
Yes. I really enjoyed that one. That was really good.
Yeah. Well, you might enjoy this week's one as well.
Presumptuous, but okay.
Because it involves another mass UFO sighting. It's quite a popular one.
Yeah.
It's the Manhattan Transfer abduction case.
Yes. Mm.
And you may guess from the title, it also involves a UFO abduction. So, you know, double whammy.
Sounds good.
Two for the price of one.
This is great. Yeah. Martin, what topic do you have to discuss today?
Yes, my news piece this week is about the US government creating a database, a secret database of people who are advocates of the US caravan that was traveling up from Mexico last year. So this has been exposed that they have a database of all these people's information and passport details. So pretty scary stuff.
Wow. And then for our Patreon supporters, we'll be discussing a slightly more lighthearted piece about borders within the UK. But that'll be going exclusively to our Patreon supporters. And of course, this podcast, as every week, will be finishing with a quiz, which I have prepared.
Woo!
Fantastic.
Nice. You're finally going to beat me.
I'll beat you because I won't be in it.
Yeah, but have you lost in 2019 yet?
He hasn't.
I don't think I have.
No, he hasn't. Yeah. So, Alex,
yes.
Tell us the tale.
So this, as I spoke about, is a UFO sighting and abduction case. And it's quite a well-known one. I don't think we've covered it on the channel before.
No, I don't think we have.
Nope.
Okay, and it's called the Manhattan Transfer Alien Abduction. One of the landmark cases of UFO abduction occurred on November 30th, 1989, in Manhattan, New York. The case centers around one Linda Napolitano, who claims to have been abducted from her closed apartment window into a waiting UFO by the Greys and subjected to medical procedures. You know, the Greys, aliens, typical.
Yeah.
Oh, the color Grey.
Typical ones.
Yeah. Stereotypical alien.
Yeah. The case became well known through the efforts of researcher Bud Hopkins. The events began at 3 a.m. on that night. So 3 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
Not quite sure how she knew it was 3 a.m., actually.
Maybe she had a watch on?
Well, I mean, okay, let's keep going.
It sounded really sarcastic. Maybe she looked at a clock.
Okay, fine. Possibly. She claimed she was woken up to find three short alien figures standing around her bed. She was unable to move and couldn't wake up her husband, who was sleeping beside her. She perceived the beings telling her to be quiet while she silently floated up out of her bed and out of her window.
Whoa.
Where she was transported into a clam-shaped alien craft.
Huh.
So like it opened up like a clam, you know?
That's interesting.
Which is an interesting depiction of a craft, actually.
Yeah, very.
Can't imagine that, actually. Well, I am. But it's actually an apt clam. Description.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a good comparison. Yeah. What do you think of that so far?
Well, that's interesting. The clam is different. And although it's not out of the realm of possibility, you know, UFOs, flying saucers at a distance, a clam-shaped craft might look like a saucer.
Yeah. So she levitated.
Yes.
So this suggests that they have some kind of magical power?
Telepathic.
Paranormal?
Well, if they can hover their craft outside a window, then I guess they could use the same technology to lift her out of the bed.
What is it? Telekinesis. Is that
That's the one.
Yeah.
The other thing is the description that they were short. I mean, just interesting.
Yeah. Just kind of
usually short. with the grey aliens, I mean, I guess they probably are depicted as quite short. But
yeah, little grey men.
Yes. Yeah, little grey men.
But yeah, they could have been tall, but they happened to be short.
Okay.
Anyway, so she woke up 2 hours later back in bed next to her husband with no memory of what had occurred. However, she slowly started to recall certain events. She remembered being experimented on and the aliens placed an instrument inside her nose.
Ew.
Yeah, gross. That's a very specific memory to have, in fairness. Yeah. And it gets pretty mad. Linda approached Bud Hopkins, a ufologist who specialized in abduction cases. I think he is actually known now as like the father of UFO abduction stories. I think he wrote several prominent books. I can't remember the names of them. But yeah, I think he's written quite a few books on like abduction stories, and he's quite well known in the field. Over the course of many interviews, regressive hypnosis, witness statements, and the actual passing of time where she like gradually remembered more and more from the event, she slowly started to recall certain events. The full image of what happened to Linda was slowly pieced together. She described her experience as, "I'm standing up on nothing, and they take me out all the way up, way above the building. Oh, I hope I don't fall," she thought. "The UFO opens up almost like a clam, and then I'm inside. I see benches similar to regular benches, and they're bringing me down a hallway. Doors open like sliding doors. Inside are all these lights and buttons and a big long table."
Ooh.
Not exactly a linguist, is she?
She didn't do a major in wordsmithery.
No. I mean, I
guess... It sounds a bit like... The mess room in the Star Trek Enterprise.
I was going to say the sliding doors detail
and the light, the buttons.
Seemed
what
a
year?
Bit,
1989.
1989.
Yeah. So Star Trek New Next Generation.
It was already a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. That was around that time, wasn't it?
Yeah. That started in 1987, and of course 1989 was the year that Star Trek V: The Final Frontier came out.
Mm. I'm a big fan. I've actually started watching Next Generation again. I've never properly watched Star Trek apart from the newer movies.
I like a couple
of the old ones. I mean, it is dated, but you know. I'm giving it a go.
Yeah.
Apparently there's like 10 years worth of content. So.
Yeah, there's seven seasons of the Next Generation.
What's interesting about this is like, could she have been, is this all derived from her and her memories? Or is this particularly with the help of the ufologist? Because he seems to obviously have a better idea of what these events look like. It'd be interesting to see whether this reflected
how much was kind of influenced by him,
yeah, exactly.
I guess, through these sessions.
Because he could unwittingly ask leading questions.
It's true.
It's difficult to know without having that kind of transcript, isn't it?
Exactly. And in fairness, he kept a lot of details about this case secret until he gathered, as much evidence as he could before he made it public.
Okay.
So yeah, that kind of thing. I guess we're not going to know, but that is a valid concern. However, there is some additional evidence that she provided. In 1991, Linda showed Hopkins a recent X-ray carried out on her head with a clearly visible foreign object placed inside her navel cavity.
Ooh.
However, she claimed this was later removed by another abduction, which she goes into no detail about.
All right. Did they do another scan to establish whether it had been removed?
Apparently, she did have a nose a nose and throat expert examine her, and apparently she had a buildup of cartilage in her nose, which suggested that there was something that was there at one point.
Oh, like the cartilage had regrown,
exactly.
Healed.
Yeah, there was a very noticeable ridge of cartilage.
So at least that part of the story is probably true. Something was
something
implanted.
Something was there.
Yeah.
Whether it was
aliens
by
or
an alien being or not, something was there and then removed.
Yeah.
I will say that I haven't seen the X-ray myself. I'm not sure where you can get that access to that.
Yeah, I guess Bert Hopkins might have it, or her family might have it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Either way, I don't think it was made available to the public. I could be wrong about that, but I couldn't see it anywhere.
Yeah.
All of this so far is pretty typical of any UFO abduction case. I mean, that bit's a bit interesting, but generally most of the evidence so far comes from her testimony and this ufologist.
At night, she was levitated.
It's pretty
probed,
typical. But what sets this one apart was what happened next.
What?
1 year after the abduction took place, Hopkins was contacted by letter from two men called Richard and Dan. They claim to be police officers who are on duty the night of the abduction. Ooh. They said they witnessed the events unfold. They were allegedly sat under the FDR bridge when they saw a bright blue light and a levitating woman surrounded by three beings. So they saw it. They saw it, essentially.
That's crazy.
They described it exactly what happened.
And they hadn't read his description of her events.
I don't think he'd made them public.
Seems unlikely, right?
Yeah.
I don't think anything had been made public at this point.
Wow. Ooh, this is a corroborating source. This is very
exactly.
Richard and Dan, any surnames? Or
no surnames.
Dick and Dan.
And that does become a source of concern for the validity of it.
Yeah.
But interesting, corroborating story. And it gets even crazier. So they allegedly felt guilty for not helping Linda. Like, they saw this. They saw a woman get abducted. Obviously, you can feel, if that happened, you can imagine the kind of emotional concern.
Yeah. You'd be terrified.
Well, terrified. I don't blame them. I mean, what can you do?
Then again, they are police. You'd so be guilty. Like, may just probably do something.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah. Shoot the alien spacecraft. Yeah.
And they wanted to know if she was okay. So in another letter, they... so that's what they were trying to find out, if she was okay. And in another letter, they revealed they were actually bodyguards for an important political figure. So they lied about being police, I think maybe it's because they wanted to protect their identities. But they were bodyguards for an important political figure. They wouldn't say who it is. However, ufologists in the UFO community believe that this VIP could have been the former Secretary General of the UN, Javier Perez de Cuellar, who was visiting Manhattan at the time of the abduction.
Interesting. I mean, I guess it's easier to verify if someone was a police officer than if they're private bodyguards.
Yeah,
it's true.
So, I mean, being a skeptic here, it's it makes more sense to say you're a bodyguard as opposed to a policeman.
Yeah.
If you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's true. That is true, yeah. I guess you would be able to track that down. Mm. So maybe that makes it a bit unbelievable. Yeah. And if
am I being too critical?
No, but also if they lied about being police, maybe they are lying
about being a bodyguard.
Yeah.
It just seems like a kind of random thing for them to lie about, I guess.
Well, I think the main puzzle is if they were willing to lie about being police in order to cover up the fact that they were bodyguards for this VIP, why would they then admit that they were bodyguards for this VIP?
It's very true.
Why would they change? Why would they admit the truth if they're lying to cover it up?
Yeah.
I don't understand that.
Well, maybe they wanted to add more weight to the theory because they said this VIP also saw the events unfold.
Ooh.
Now, apparently he's refused to comment on the incident, but has met with Hopkins in secret in private meetings to clarify certain details. But he refuses to comment publicly on it, which... kind of makes sense if you were a, you know, high up UN official.
What was the title of the official?
Secretary General.
Secretary General.
What are they doing out at 3 a.m.?
I mean, that's a good point. It's a good point. Apparently, they were taking him to a helipad to fly off somewhere. It's
possible he'd have
an early flight. It could happen. I guess an event and then off.
Why are they approaching Bud Hopkins with this information rather than the woman?
Well, this is
it. Actual police.
Yeah.
This is the thing. Yeah. This is part of the kind of like suspicion surrounding it because they saw her go from the window. They said that they could point out the window that she came from, so they knew where she lived.
Yeah.
And the thing is, they did visit her as well.
Yeah.
And it's unknown whether it was kind of during this correspondence with Hopkins, before or after, basically.
Right.
It's possible that they met her beforehand, got. And then kind of...
And maybe she pointed them towards Hopkins.
Maybe they weren't sure what they saw. And then, having met her, the story became clear in their
minds. That would be problematic, wouldn't it? If they've met with her before they tell their story so that she can, again, whether unwittingly or not, influence their story.
Yes.
Exactly.
And she might have in turn been influenced unwittingly or not by Bud Hopkins... potentially asking leading questions while she's under hypnosis. It's a shame because It's a very interesting story, but already the evidence is looking pretty shaky.
The story with Richard and Dan gets even crazier, though.
What?
It doesn't end there. Uh-huh. They're not just witnesses in this story. They're like...
Participants. They are.
They're aliens.
So apparently, they became paranoid and obsessed with Linda. And on two separate occasions, twice this happened, they abducted her in broad daylight.
What?
And interrogated her. So they were they thought that she was an alien or working for the government. Or
what?
And they wanted to know what happened that night. Apparently they forced her to take off her shoes so they could check her feet to see if she was an alien, because they thought she'd have webbed feet or no feet or something, which is weird.
Yeah. I mean.
And apparently in the second abduction,
they
took her to a beach house and they one of them, Dan, apparently held her head underwater and was like proper torturing her.
Waterboarding.
What? Waterboarding her. Oh, and then Richard kind of held Dan back and she escaped. And then apparently they sent her a letter later on where Richard basically said that Dan had been committed to an asylum and had gone totally mad.
Wow.
So extremely dramatic. Obviously the question I had when I was looking into this, why the hell didn't she go to the police the first time or the second time?
Yeah.
And she's just refused to go to the police.
If you're an alien, you can't go to the police, mate.
True.
Strip search.
That's true.
Have you found out in minutes?
Yeah.
Maybe Dick and Dan were actually FBI or NSA or something. Lied about being bodyguards, but they're actually part of the Men in Black covering up things.
Yes.
And this is what happens to people who've witnessed or experienced alien abductions.
I hadn't thought of that. Maybe they were Men in Black.
No, that's a good link.
That's a good link, yeah.
That is a good link. And hence why there might not be anywhere near as much information about them as an official report would give.
Yeah.
So this last bit of the story where she was taken away and waterboarded or tortured or whatever, has this come from her or has it come from them? Is it corroborated as well?
Yes.
It's come from her.
Okay.
And basically her telling Hopkins the story.
And so she knows that Richard was then institutionalized, supposedly.
So
Dan is then corroborating the story. So he's saying that
Richard
is
corroborating.
Sorry.
That Dan has been sent to an asylum.
Yes.
Yes.
So he's basically making it clear that he and Dan did abduct her, and she's saying they did abduct me.
Yeah, but I think
which is
that's
a crime.
Basically right.
Yeah.
Which is a crime, and it's kind of why didn't she go to the police? There's an obvious answer there, which is that she made the story up. Which
I know, but at the same time, victims of, if you're kidnapped, victims don't often go to the police. They're scared of repercussions, aren't they?
Yeah, that
especially
is
especially if these
true.
Guys are either security officials or part of a secret organization.
Yeah. And if they've done it twice already, they might easily do it again.
Yeah, exactly.
It's true. Apparently, she did ask an investigator into this case. I can't remember the name of them.
Yeah.
But apparently she asked them if she could, if it came to it, she could use like a weapon on them, like shoot them and kill them to defend herself.
Yeah.
And they advised against it and said, you should go to the police. It might have been Hopkins that she spoke to about that, actually.
Right.
But yeah, if you were that scared,
it
seems like you'd go to the police. But then, like you say, maybe... victims don't often do that, don't always do that.
Yeah, the amount of times victims of any kind of crime don't come forward is huge.
And maybe she was just so paranoid by that point. If they first approached her as policemen and then said, oh, we're not policemen, she might have thought, well, how do I know I'm actually talking to a policeman?
True.
And again, if she's an alien,
you don't go to
authority.
Mm. What if they're the aliens following up on the first abduction?
They're the ones that took the device out of the neighbor.
They saw it, because they were there.
They were there,
and so they're maybe even shape-shifting.
Yes.
Grays.
Could be.
An interesting theory, but I do have my doubts.
Yeah.
I mean, the first thing... Oh, sorry, I'll let you carry on.
Alex. Okay, well, I've only got one little bit left. So since the case was made public, UFO and abduction researcher Sean F. Mears claims there are now 23 witnesses who have publicly come forward claiming to have seen the event.
Who said that?
UFO and abduction researcher Sean F. Mears.
Okay.
yeah. So there are now 23 witnesses claiming to have seen the event. Yeah,
but only since it was published by Bird Hopkins.
I think there was another witness who came forward when only certain details had emerged from it.
Okay.
They thought that they had seen it, but they thought there was a movie being filmed and it was part of like a a movie being filmed.
Yeah,
that's some great practical effects if that was true.
Some shooting late at night, I guess, is quite a common kind of thing.
But then when they heard some of the details of the story, they were like, oh, I saw that.
Yeah.
And there was a lady who was on the bridge who apparently saw it as well, who came forward.
Did she see Dick and Dan beneath
the bridge? Well, they were under the bridge, don't think so.
Oh.
But she was in her car.
Shame. It would be nice to know if they were really there.
But Linda maintains that the strongest evidence for this claim lies in all of the witnesses together. She says, if I was hallucinating, then the witnesses saw my hallucination.
Mm.
That sounds crazier than the whole abduction phenomenon, which I think is actually a pretty
good point.
If it was just something like sleep paralysis and she dreamed it, then how comes 23 people have come forward and claimed to see something? So it's weird in that regard. However, I will say that I do have my concerns about it.
Uh-huh.
A few points. I'll say the biggest one now. Hopkins never met Richard and Dan. Never met them.
Just letters.
Just letters from Richard and Dan.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Linda could have possibly made up Richard and Dan. There's no evidence Richard and Dan actually exist. And that would also explain why she never went to the police.
Yeah.
Because they're made up.
Yeah.
So there's that. And there's kind of their story about, you know, moving a high up UN official.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently in the book, The Trickster and the Paranormal, they cite a person who formerly served as a dignitary protective services person.
Okay.
So they interviewed someone who actually transported people, and they read Richard and Dan's account of the night.
Yeah.
And said that the details don't match up with security protocol for moving UN officials. Their testimony is kind of
so they're lying about
unusual.
Something.
Either they're lying about transferring, you know, this high up UN official, or they're made up people and Linda's made them up entirely, which could be possible to corroborate her own story.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult because, if I may interrupt, the poor Linda, either it happened to her, in which case she could be suffering such psychological shock and trauma from the event that she's developed some kind of psychosis that compels her to make up Richard and Dan in order to make herself feel better about her own experience.
Mm.
To kind of like, you know, it's possible with trauma victims, they can't confront what happened to them and they can't believe it happened to them, so they live in a kind of weird denial. And if it was brought out by Bud Hopkins, especially with hypnosis, then she might have suffered so much that she thought she invents these people to corroborate her own story in order to make it seem more real because she can't believe it happened to her.
Yes.
Or she made it all up.
What's interesting is that the story gradually comes back to her.
Yeah.
Mm. Gradually over time. She's in a dialogue with this ufologist, and yet it's not at the beginning where she tells the whole story. It's gradually over time, piece by piece. It's like, oh, and this. It seems like it's, and this happened,
and this happened.
That is like a classic kind of storytelling.
Mm. Yes. Embellishing as it goes.
Yes.
And that kind of...
Perhaps.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, like you say, if this has happened to her, incredibly traumatic. So the other thing is with the x-ray, they said that something was there but then was removed.
Mm.
It sounds like she potentially had an injury there in the past.
Mm.
Yeah,
it'd be interesting to know how, because you can tell with the stuff like that how long, you know, those kind of scar tissues been there and how long ago it healed. Interesting to find out exactly what kind of a time frame is for that.
One thing I can add to this is that Linda's x-ray may have been carried out by her niece, Lisa Bayer, who was a podiatric surgeon. And that would kind of make the evidence a little bit less reliable because it's someone that she knows, as in she could have put something up her nose, had the x-ray, oh, there it is,
kind of thing. Yeah.
So that's a possibility, maybe. I feel like I'm attacking her evidence, but I'm just kind of challenging it, I think. Also, I think you've got to challenge.
You're right to challenge it. It's the big problem, the big tragedy of all these UFO sightings and abduction cases is that the people involved and the evidence they produce is always so unreliable, and it discredits itself. You know, we don't need the government to interfere and discredit these people because the evidence they're producing is so flimsy anyway. Which partly maybe because the aliens are being very clever about the way they do things, or it could be because, you know, it's just unfortunate luck that these people have bad evidence. But if you're conducting any kind of proper investigation, whether it's a historical study or a criminal investigation, you need much more solid proof. And it's my biggest problem with UFO sightings of the last few decades is that there's so little good quality proof.
Yes, that's true.
So we can't know for sure whether they happened or not.
Yeah. And nowadays, I mean, everyone has a camera phone on them. Yeah. And so you think you're going to get a little bit more concrete evidence, but even still today, there are ways in which most UFO sightings can actually be, oh, actually, it was refraction from this. It was
well, apparently, or whatever. Apparently last year, UFO sightings dropped drastically. They nearly halved, I think, actual reported UFO sightings. So maybe smartphones, like everyone has a smartphone now, like you say, you'd think you'd get more UFO sightings, but actually you're getting far fewer. Maybe that's why. Maybe because there's fewer potato quality cameras.
Yeah.
Now you can see, oh no, it was just a lamppost.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Yeah, it's possible.
As we've discussed before, like the way in which people are reporting these sightings isn't through like official means. It's posting it on Reddit. It's posting it on social media, which means that the sightings aren't necessarily recorded, but they do still happen.
Yeah, that's true. Posted
via different channels.
Yeah, that's a good point we have spoken about.
And I would hate to think that we were discrediting someone's actual experience, whether traumatic, just because we haven't experienced it ourselves. Yeah. I know that's something that's quite easy to do, isn't it?
That's a good point. Yeah, I think I don't want to discredit this because at the end of the day, we can't know that this didn't happen.
No, we can't.
And this is, you know, 23 people have come forward and said that they saw it.
Even if it was after details had been published.
If just one of those actually saw it, that could provide a lot of evidence for this. So it's still a good case, in my opinion. Mm. There are several problems with it, though, I think, that we've gone through. Another thing that I don't understand with Richard and Dan is that they were apparently really concerned for Linda, but then waited a year to get in touch with anyone. That's kind of weird.
It is a bit, although I'm so disorganized, it takes me ages to do things. I'm your classic spouse. Just like, are you going to fix that faucet? It's like, yeah, I'll do it tomorrow. 2 years later, you're going to fix that? It's like, yeah, I'll do it now.
I mean, maybe they were worried about getting in trouble if they were security or police, as they claim to be.
Yeah.
They were worried that in the position of authority that they're in, seemingly not doing anything would either get them fired from their jobs or at very least negative press about the two of them.
Possibly.
Maybe they had to wait until their assignment was over. And a year later, they'd stopped being on the detail for that, for the IP. I mean,
there are reasons, but it is odd. That's a fair point.
Or maybe they were the men in black investigating the case.
There we go.
Maybe. But what do you guys think about this case? Do you think that her testimony was accurate? And do you think the Manhattan Transfer abduction story was actually genuine? Let us know in the comments below.
And on Twitter and Facebook, or by emailing us at alltimeconspiracies@gmail.com.
And we might even put a poll in up above.
Yeah,
around
on YouTube.
Now.
Yeah.
We might not, but we might. So if it's there, please vote.
So there you go. That was my story.
That was great. Thank you.
Good one.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's a really good one. It's certainly one of the most interesting UFO abduction stories because of the sheer weight of evidence, if not the plausibility of the evidence.
Yes.
Well, reliability, I should say, not plausibility. But Martin, do you want to talk about something slightly more current?
Yes, yeah. So my news story today is... I'll tell you the headline, then we can discuss it further.
Ooh, okay.
So it says, leaked documents show the US government tracking journalists and immigration advocates through a secret database.
What a headline.
So initial thoughts before we go into it?
Well, this isn't the first database they've had, the first secret database with collecting information on groups of people. They've been doing this since the government existed, haven't they?
Yeah.
They dated back to the 60s when they were collecting evidence against Martin Luther King and all the civil rights activists. Mm. Just like, we've got to prove they're all commies. Not that I'm saying the government has an agenda in this instance.
Alex, any initial thoughts?
I think Robin pretty much covered it. Yeah, it's just a mad story, and it's kind of one of those things that's like, if it's true, then it's, yeah, like, you know those stories where it's like suddenly you get a sense that you're currently living in a dystopia, that kind of, that kind of news story. It's mad. I'm excited to find out more.
Great. My initial thoughts were, this is directly linked to immigration, which is something slightly unusual. Different. It's a very specific database, based on supposedly advocates of the caravan that passed through the US from Mexico, I think, last year. So I thought it was interesting that that it was specific to that, and also the fact of who the database included. So it's activists, journalists, and also social media influencers tied to the migrant caravan. And in some cases, they actually placed alerts on their passports.
Are we on the list?
Probably. I mean, let's be honest.
I hope so.
I mean, I feel like we're kind of
a bit too far removed, probably, to be a threat to American security.
Maybe.
I mean, we're not. Can we check?
I wouldn't say we're advocates.
Yeah, no.
So, no, but that is interesting because it's definitely taking a political stance on this issue. It's suggesting that anyone who has sympathy with those migrants is therefore worth tracking in case they're conducting illegal activity or helping people get into the country illegally, which is very, very presumptuous. And also, I think, sets a precedent to, if a particular topic is against government policy, those people need to be tracked. And I think that is the scariest thing about
this topic. Scariest thing about it. This very much sounds like something the Trump administration is interested in and not something that other administrations would do.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, maybe we're being presumptuous there, but it seems like Trump's number one agenda is the wall. It's the migrant caravan. It's the state of emergency.
Yeah.
All of those things are directly related to this.
And it ties in as well, the fact that it's journalists is what gets me, because that kind of ties into the whole fake news, you know, like attacking, literally attacking journalists that go against the government policy and your personal beliefs. It's pretty mad.
So what it says, that journalists who covered the caravan, as well as those who offered assistance to caravan members, so I can understand that a little bit more if you're helping people who are potentially illegal immigrants, you are potentially committing a crime. But, you know, those who assisted caravan members said they felt they'd become targets of intense inspections and scrutiny by border officials. So this was before the official news that a database existed. So these American photojournalists and attorneys said they suspected the US government was monitoring them closely, but until now they couldn't prove it. So NBC7 investigations basically proved this week that their fears weren't unfounded.
Right.
They showed that their own government had listed their names in a secret database of targets, interesting word to use, where agents collected information on them. Some had alerts placed on their passports, keeping at least three photojournalists and an attorney from entering Mexico to work. So it's actually restricting their movement as well, based on this.
But they haven't done anything illegal, right, at this point in time?
Well...
Or, like, there's nothing proven?
No, they haven't gone through the court system. It's basically those who are either advocates of the caravan.
Mm-hmm.
Use the word caravan. I hope everyone knows what we mean by that. People traveling from Mexico to the US specifically. So those who are either advocates of them or writing kind of in favor of them. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't suggest that they necessarily did anything illegal or haven't been proven to have done anything illegal, which is worrying in itself.
And yet their movement was restricted and like across the border and that kind
of thing. These people have not been prosecuted for this. But there have been checks on their passport, which is worrying. This is really interesting. And it says the documents were provided to NBC7 by a Homeland Security source on the condition of anonymity. That is so stupid, isn't it? Who from Homeland Security gave this to NBC7 and expected them to keep it to themselves, unless they actually wanted this news to get out?
Well, but that's why they want to be anonymous. Because they know NBC's going to break the news,
Exactly, but... Yeah.
But another leak. Yet another leak.
But you would expect that the Homeland Security to not really want this to come out, surely.
It was clearly just this one person. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure others in Homeland Security probably feel the same, but this one person probably saw what they were doing and thought, no, I've got to blow the whistle, this is messed up, but maybe.
Presumably an anti-Trump person.
Presumably.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not. Maybe it was just this one thing they thought crossed the line.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to know who that person was, whether they are in favor of the Trump administration's attitude towards the caravan and people who sympathize with immigrants in general, but think that this is an infringement of individuals' rights. Similarly to the way that Edward Snowden actually is a very strong Republican and very pro-anti-terror measures, but thought that the NSA went too far. Yeah, when he was there, which is why he leaked all those documents.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting one because a lot of staunch Republicans almost can verge on libertarian.
Yeah,
by the very nature of it, because they're very much okay. The Constitution is the foundation of the U.S.
Yeah,
it is as patriotic Americans, we have the Constitution. We have Second Amendment. Yeah. We have all of our rights, and those should not be infringed by the government. And then that almost verges on. Yeah, libertarianism quite often.
So it'd be great to know the motive behind leaking this, whether it's somebody who just doesn't like Trump and wants to damage his administration, or whether it's someone who thinks that the Trump administration, it might not be Trump himself who ordered this, it could be someone else, but whether he thinks they've gone too far.
Yes.
He or she thinks they've gone too far.
Yeah, exactly. And from the information that's come out so far, we don't necessarily know. But yes, it is very interesting. So the documents have like detailed profiles of each individual person.
Wow.
Show their passports and show their photos, their social media accounts, and all of their personal information as well, the date of birth, the country they were born in, etc. So it's very, very detailed. So they've gone and created this quite expansive database to track these people down, which. To me, it's really, really worrying.
Yeah.
Does it set a precedent of creating databases for other policies that are not in favour with the government? I mean, what do you guys think about that? Which other policies do you think this could expand to?
That's a really good question. I'm not too sure, but I think we're living in a world where privacy is kind of becoming a thing of the past. Like, I'm curious. These databases, I mean, they're kind of tracking everyone in the US, right? Anyway, like, how expansive is this? I think what gets me is not that they've built up like a database of these people, but the fact that they're actually restricting their movement and restricting their ability to like move across the border and that kind of thing, based on nothing that's prosecutable, just kind of suspicions that they have sympathy for the migrant caravan. How is that?
I mean, it was difficult to know exactly what information they have,
but
creating a database of people without,
but like, what information do they have?
Prosecutable evidence.
I guess what information do they have on them that isn't also, I mean, they've got their passports, I guess, but that isn't generally available just online for most people.
That's a good point. I guess it's almost that fear of the government tracking you individually. If they have that information on you, it doesn't take much for them to stop your movement. It doesn't take much for them to incarcerate you, to send you to an internment camp. I think so far, I think it was 10 have had their passports recorded, whereas I think overall there's 47 that are tracked on the database.
Wow.
I think that's right. So it's not huge at the moment, but you know, what are the next steps?
But that makes it scarier. Because it's clearly so targeted and focused on these particular people for this specific reason. And I think this is, whichever way you look at it, this is an abuse of power by the government. It doesn't have, just look at it objectively, it doesn't matter why they're doing it and who made the decision. The fact of the matter is that you've got the government has decided a non-national security related issue is worthy of targeted surveillance and, like you say, controlled movement of a very, very, very small group of individuals in America who belong to the press, you know, and activists and things. Like I said at the beginning with the civil rights, it reminds me of the 60s when anti-Vietnam activists were monitored by the FBI, mostly by Hoover's orders because he was paranoid about communism. But, you know, the Democrats under LBJ and the Republicans under Nixon knew about this. They knew about this wiretapping and this monitoring. And people like Martin Luther King, you know, monitored, wiretapped, blackmailed even over his affairs simply because he wanted equal rights.
Yeah.
But they thought he might be something else. But the important thing there is that they individually, Hoover in particular, thought Martin Luther King might be a communist. No one else thought that. No one else. It's not like today where we can agree that measures need to be taken to protect everyone in the nation against terrorists. You know, everyone on both sides of the political aisle agree that terrorism is a threat to our way of life, and therefore that we have to have measures to protect us from it. We can debate how far those measures should go, but in this case, it's to do with the immigrant caravan.
Yeah,
this database was started and is collecting information specifically related to that one issue.
But then, I mean, terrorism is, know, yeah.
But sorry, Alex, sorry. But then the government stance, I guess, on the migrant caravan and the border in general is that it's a national emergency.
Well, that's
right? I mean, it's being contested by the Democrats and by members in Congress, and it hasn't been officially declared as that. But that's what their the government stance is, right?
Yeah, which is worrying, right?
From one point of view,
it doesn't make sense.
From one point of view, it's worrying. But if you're someone who believes that that is the primary concern for the US at the moment is immigration and people entering the country illegally, then you have the idea that okay, if you're not doing anything wrong, then it doesn't matter.
But consider if the Democrats were in power, how outraged people would be if they were doing the same thing to climate change deniers.
Well, I mean, that's why.
Because there's a lot of people who think climate change should be declared a national emergency. You know, whether you think that's right or wrong.
Well, that's why a load of, like, kind of right-wing pundits are actually against the national emergency declaration, because they say when a Democrat comes into power, they're just going to make climate change a national emergency. Yeah. Which kind of shows that the ability to declare a national emergency is kind of a weird thing, I guess. I mean, although it's pretty ambiguous what could be a national emergency. If you could just declare anything a national emergency.
I mean, it's interesting that in the last few years, national emergencies have been called, I think, on average once or twice per year in the US.
Right.
But most of them have been called by the president with issues, foreign affair issues. So there was the issue in Yemen, I think one was called for that.
Yes.
There was the issue in Syria. I think it's pretty much international conflicts the national emergency is called.
This is the first domestic national emergency since the 90s, I think. 9/11,
probably.
Yeah, and even that was more to do with foreign relations than anything else.
Yeah, but on American soil, I guess.
Yeah, on American soil, yeah.
So it's interesting that this has been called a national emergency, and whether, because climate change, that could be called a national emergency because it is a global issue. So there, it's almost like that would follow to a certain degree trends. But it does kind of set a precedent with the caravan national emergency.
I mean, there are two points of silver lining about this, I guess. One is that, however way you look at it, the Trump administration has raised so many constitutional issues. It's good. It's about time that America re-examined its political system and decided whether it really works to represent everybody properly.
Yeah, true.
And whether the president has too much power or whether the Congress has too much power. You know, the balance of power needs to be re-examined. I don't know. I'm certainly not a person to make a decision on that, but hopefully experts would look at it and say, we need to shift it like this.
That is tough in itself.
It is very tough.
Constitution,
because of course it's exposed what a lot of people have, like you say, a lot of right wing people have long criticised, which is the president has potentially huge sweeping powers, right? But the American system has been so based on trust and decency and saying, we trust our president to do the right thing and not abuse his power. And there are certain mechanisms in place for Congress to prevent a president overstepping the mark.
Well, that's it, yeah.
But since, particularly again, the 60s, as an example, the president isn't able to declare war, only Congress can.
Well,
but effectively, since the 60s, the president can declare war because they've just granted so many more powers to him.
And the Patriot Act, if you look at post-9/11, with Bush bringing in the Patriot Act in 2000, just straight after, wasn't it, 2001, maybe 2002, and using that straight off the bat, it's like executive order slammed down onto the table.
Yeah.
And the whole shift in checks and balances that the Constitution's based on is slightly out of whack.
Yeah. No, you're right. So that's a silver lining, I guess. And this is another example of the flaws in the system, I guess, potentially being exposed, because you might agree that the caravan and immigration is a national emergency that warrants a database being collected on individuals who are supportive of it in the media. And you might disagree. But I think it's hard to not conclude this is an abuse of government power.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we all agreed there.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a bit of a rant.
No, it's really interesting, Robin. Yeah. I think you brought up a great point that I think most people would agree with. Yeah, yeah. I certainly do.
Oh, thank you, Martin.
I think it'd be interesting to see who these people that they've targeted and made a database actually are.
How many of them were the Washington Post and the New York Times?
genuinely, if they are just kind of big political pundits that, Trump has personal vendettas against, or if they're actual, genuine, like, kind of activists that some questions should be raised over. Yeah. You know, I think the headline is very scary. I think I need to wait and see how this one plays out.
Yeah.
Because, like you say, there's not too many on the list at the moment. But yeah, if it's like Chris Cuomo or Jim Acosta on the list.
But it also massively shows the power of social media influencers, considering they're included in a relatively small list. It's like, okay, we're doing something right, you know? Included. Which I'm just interested to who that might actually be.
PewDiePie!
But yeah, that was also something that was interesting to me. Yeah. Scary, definitely. But interesting.
Yeah, well, what do you think? Do you think social media influencers should be considered on the same level as everyone else?
I think it's going that way with the influence they have.
Yeah.
And the fact that, I mean, for a while, traditional broadcasters haven't really had to verify much, to be fair. But social media influencers especially, they can talk, fire from the hip, talk from their heart. Don't really have to back that much up. We try to with sources.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, Instagrammers or whatever, they'll just say what their thoughts are and people will listen to that, take it on board as gospel in some cases, regardless of whether they've backed up their thoughts with legitimate sources. So I think they definitely have a lot of power and not necessarily always checked power.
I mean, what do you guys think at home? Please let us know again on our Facebook, Twitter, and the YouTube comments, or via our email at alltimeconspiracies@gmail.com. speaking of your opinions, shall we look at some comments?
YouTube? Sounds good.
What are your favourite comments from the past week?
Let's have a look. So, Lord Cyrus, I had to bring this one up.
Lord Cyrus, that's a great name.
Lord One Cyrus, actually.
Oh.
Says, Alex and Martin have awesome beards. Thank you.
Ah, you do.
That's nice.
You do.
So thanks very much. Meanwhile, Manny Guy says, I've always said that Robin could be a robot until you guys started doing these podcasts.
Aww.
I eased a bit and was like, he might actually be human. So he might be human.
You do come across as human on this one, despite the wires under the table.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No comment on that?
Well,
do you want to deny being a robot?
A lot of people have commented on the videos in the past that I have a robotic voice, which... I'm sad if that annoys people. I hope it doesn't.
No, I think most people...
I come across as much more.
Most people are only here for your voice.
Let's be honest. When you're not here, Robin, we cry inside and I think other people cry openly. So.
Yeah. Well, we know that's not true. Have you ever seen my legs? I'm just a torso. Torso robot.
I just imagined you as the... You know, in Toy Story, the baby when it gets... With the spider.
Oh,
just
the spider legs. Yeah.
Oh, that's a weird thought.
If I were to be a robot, that would be the robot.
Mm. Please send us a Photoshop of that, and I'll we'll include it in next week's podcast. So Jeremy Jenkins says, I played along with the quiz. So this was on last week's podcast.
Oh, yeah.
I played along with the quiz. I didn't get any of them right. Don't feel bad, Robin.
So, oh, thank you, Jeremy.
And you actually got one right, so you beat Jeremy.
Mm. Yeah, but it was the bonus question. So I don't think it counts.
No, it was quite a hard quiz, and I'm sorry.
Plus, Robin can't feel bad because he can't feel emotions because he's a robot. So there you go.
I don't know. I can conclude that logically something is bad. Shall we do a quiz?
Definitely.
I'm up for a quiz. Always up for a quiz.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This week's quiz is just general knowledge, really. There's
a cookie. Where did the cookie come from? I'm fine, but I'm professional.
And that's the way.
Sorry if there's any chomping in this quiz. Right. I'm just a bit hungry.
Triple chocolate.
Are you sure you don't want one?
No, I'll be all right. Okay. I've got to read out these questions. Can't do it with a cookie in my mouth.
Yeah.
What are your buzzers, Alex?
My buzzer, I've gone for the classic.
It's good. It's very you.
Very you.
Very me. Dramatic.
What does that mean?
Gopher. Okay.
Martin?
One for the old Jigsaw Hazard.
That's so
nice.
Good.
Quality.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. All right, then. Fingers on buzzers.
Okay.
Question one. King Edward.
Oh, God, I'm terrible. I'm so bad with royal stuff. Okay.
Maris Piper and Romano
yes.
are all...
Mum was the wrong way around. Mum was that way around.
Alex, what are they?
Potatoes.
They are potatoes. Well done, Alex.
I'm bad with the royal family, but I'm good with potatoes.
I'm blaming the cookie.
1-0 to Alex. Question two.
You chose to have the cookie.
Are you, fingers on your buzzer, Martin. Are you ready?
I'll try to. Yeah. Okay.
Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman were in which 1976 film about the Watergate?
I don't know.
Yes, Martin?
Was there an original Frost Nixon?
No.
Okay.
It's quite a famous film. You'll definitely have heard of it, and you'll probably kick yourself.
Father Watergate. So.
Robert Redford in a Nixon film.
Yeah.
Weird.
Don't think quite so literally.
It's not fully about the Nixon thing.
It's about the Watergate scandal.
1960s film.
Famous film. 1976.
1976.
Yeah. Mm. Sorry, Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman.
Is it? I don't think it's about Watergate. Maybe it has some kind of things in there. Is it the 3 Days of the Condor?
No.
Although
that is another Robert Redford starring conspiracy film from the 1970s. I think it was 73.
I'm not sure if I know this one.
No, I'm not sure I do either.
Think of a clue.
You're much better at cinema stuff than
you are. You are. You'll kick yourself, and I probably would have never heard of it.
Both of them, Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman, play journalists in the film.
I don't know. Dustin Hoffman. I just know him in Rain Man. And
Tootsie.
What's the graduate?
No, I'm not sure, I'm afraid.
Okay, it's...
I'm going to pass.
You're going to pass? Okay, it's All the President's Men.
I've heard of it.
Oscar-winning film. Fantastic version. Based on the book by Woodward and Bernstein.
So definitely worth a watch then.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Seek it out.
I just want to give a shout recommendation as well, actually. Just watched a Flat Earth documentary on Netflix. Would recommend.
Convinced?
It's called Behind the Curve.
Behind the Curve. Would
recommend it.
Okay.
Go and watch it.
Yeah, we'll have to watch that tonight. Number three, question three. Still 1-0 to Alex. Which Mexican painter, born in 1907, and known for her surrealist work, was depicted on screen by Salma Hayek in 2002?
Well, I definitely don't know.
Or you can just give me the name of a Mexican painter born in 1907 who painted surrealist paintings.
a female Mexican painter.
Female Mexican painter.
Some people at home are going to be absolutely shouting, aren't they?
Yeah, they might be. famous for her eyebrow.
I think I see the picture.
I see the picture.
I don't see the picture.
Oh no, maybe I'm thinking of something else. Yeah.
No guesses.
Rosea.
No, not Rosea.
Maria.
I'll give you her initials. They were FK. Oh, I thought you had it there. No, it is Frida Kahlo. In the film Frida, Salma Hayek played her.
Okay. We're not doing so well.
No.
There is an unintentional theme to these questions.
Just potatoes so far.
Feel free to play along at home as well. Let us know how you're doing.
Yeah, your score. I hope someone at least has got 3 for 3. Question number 4. You might know this one. Actress Mila Kunis was born in which country? That was Alex first.
I don't know.
Was it Ukraine?
It was Ukraine.
Well done.
Well done. So that's
I knew it was kind of like Eastern European.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, origin. Yeah.
And of course, in the news a lot lately. I wonder if she has any kind of personal emotions when she hears about Ukraine and Russia and stuff like
Crimea.
That.
Mm. Yeah.
Did you know that one, Martin?
No, I didn't. I would have said maybe Latin America. Or Kunis, maybe Greece.
Yeah,
sounds a little bit.
Could be.
I don't know. Probably some Greek people out there going, "What the hell are you saying?"
Question number 5: which word beginning with C is the name for the outermost part of the sun's atmosphere, and is only visible with the naked eye during a solar eclipse?
Oh,
it's a word beginning with C, describing the outermost layer of the sun.
I don't know if I know that. Yeah.
Do you want a clue?
Yeah, I'll have a clue.
It's also a word. It's not an English word.
Okay.
But it describes something that kings and queens everywhere might have.
Oh,
about to say. No, that doesn't make sense.
Is it a crown sphere?
No,
crown
not quite,
stratosphere.
But you're in the right region. Yeah.
I thought crown maybe because like the ring on an eclipse might look like.
You're in the right area, but it's not the word I'm looking for.
Not enough for a point though.
So not enough for a point. Okay, Martin, so do you want to guess?
Crown.
You want to guess? I can give you another clue after you've guessed.
So I was thinking of Italian with the Italian word castel.
Castle?
Yeah, but that's clearly not right because it doesn't make any sense.
That's kind of a guess.
Well, I'll give you one more clue. Okay. It's also the name of a drink that a certain film franchise is very fond of.
I mean, that was an unfair clue for me, really.
I suppose, so maybe.
A Corona.
It is Corona, yes.
What film franchise?
Fast and Furious. i.e. the best film franchise of all time.
Your favourite film.
I'll find anyone who disagrees.
That clue might have been a bit too much for Alex, but it's 3-0 to Alex.
I've only seen Fast and Furious 2, and that was when I was about 10.
You mean Too Fast, Too Furious?
Yeah.
That's the one. You've got so many to catch up on.
Oh, it's
a great weekend.
That is the best second movie in the Fast and Furious franchise. I'll have you know. Question number 6. There's still a chance for Martin to come back from this. Plenty of time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Could do.
Vaduz, or Vaduz, V-A-D-U-Z, is the capital city of which European country?
Vaduz.
It's a small country.
Yes.
Mm.
What about... end of the buzzer.
Just the ending of it. Yes, Mr. Alex?
Albania?
Not Albania. Martin?
I'm thinking of what it's not. Vaduz. Sounds Eastern European.
Yeah.
But it's not Slovakia. It's not Slovenia.
Mm.
It's not Hungary. It's not Bulgaria. Could it be? Okay, I better say something now. Could it be?
There's got to be a time limit, surely.
Yeah.
How long till we get another clue?
I'll keep on thinking.
Um,
Okay, you get one more guess, and then Martin gets two guesses.
I mean, is a clue going to happen at some point? Or is
I could give you a clue, but then Martin hasn't had his first guess yet, so I don't know.
Should I just say something?
Take a guess, then we'll get a clue.
Okay, small European country.
Yep, let's go for...
I've got my second guess all lined up. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
crap.
Could it be San Marino?
No, it's not. Alex, what's your second guess?
Well, I'd like to hear a clue first. Okay. If we're going to get a clue.
I'm going to exploit film knowledge if people have it.
Okay.
The name of this city features prominently in the 2001 film A Knight's Tale.
In fairness, that was going to be my guess. I'm not even joking.
That was actually
Ulrich von Lichtenstein.
Lichtenstein is the answer.
You
well
know
done.
What? I was trying 4-0. To think of. I was trying to think of the European Championships and the qualifiers of who England usually play, and Lichtenstein was one of the ones that comes
up. Really? Yeah. Ah, see, if I knew my football.
Yeah.
What was that football?
Yeah, football. Yeah.
Just checking.
Yeah, Lichtenstein. I think we played them out 3 or 4 times in qualifying.
Okay, question 7.
This isn't good. This feels like last week when. Yeah,
it's happened to me last week. 4-0 to Alex. Sorry. There's still 4 questions, Martin. You could get them all right.
Basically, just hacked into our computers and looks like
that. So.
Yeah, very good, very good.
Fingers on buzzers. American architect Frank Lloyd Wright is best known for his, for his spiral design of which 1959 New York landmark?
Spiral design?
Yeah.
Could it be the Rockefeller Tower?
No.
Is that spiraled? No, it's not, is it? Spiraled.
Alex, do you have a guess?
Of a New York landmark.
Yeah, well, building landmark.
I couldn't even guess. Anything? It's quite a well-known place, I guess.
You've definitely heard of it. But, I can imagine why it wouldn't be the first thing that springs to your mind.
Yeah.
Is it conspiracy related? Okay, I'm asking too many questions now.
Have a guess and then
take a clue. Guess and I'll give you a clue.
Genuinely, I don't even. What did you say? Rockefeller Tower?
Yeah. I'm thinking of skyscrapers, but it's not going to be, is it? It's going to be something completely different.
No, go on to the
spiral.
Clue.
Okay.
I can't even guess.
Okay, I'll give you a clue. It's a place where you might see something made by Frida Kahlo.
Oh, that doesn't help either.
she was the artist, right, from the earlier question?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
If I only had
what
seen that film.
What galleries are in... what art centres are in New York? The New York Institute of Art.
The Met.
No. Martin, do you have a second guess?
The... New York Institute for Art.
No, I'm going to give you.
It's made up.
I'm just going to say it. It's the Guggenheim Museum of Art.
I got museum Guggenheim. And art.
Okay.
You did. Okay. Question 8. 4-0 to Alex.
Oh dear.
Which British athlete won gold in both the 5,000 meters and 10,000 meters events?
Okay.
Martin.
It was Mo Farah.
It was Mo Farah. Well done. 4-1. Question 9. At university, you may receive an MBA. But what does MBA stand for?
MBA.
Is it a master... Oh, no, because that's master... Master of Bachelor of Arts?
No.
BA. I was like BA, and then I'm like MBA.
No.
It's got to be... something more specific, I guess. Yeah, because I was thinking masters, but then,
yeah,
a
then
masters
like,
of bachelors.
No,
exactly.
That's definitely not right.
Yeah.
Masters of business accounting or something.
Incredibly close.
Really?
But I don't think I can give it to you. Really?
Oh no.
I'll give you both one more guess.
Okay.
Oh, and the clue is that Alex is very close.
Very close.
Business.
Could it be business actuary?
No.
It doesn't make sense, does it? No. I'm done.
Masters of business.
Masters of business.
Masters of business. I
I can't think of any more words.
You were very
Masters
close.
Of business and finance.
No, MBA.
I don't know where the F.
So accounting.
I can't think of another A.
It sounds really boring. Actually,
accreditation.
It's a master of business administration.
I think you should get a point. That was very close, isn't it?
Nah, he's already got 4.
I don't really need another point. Yeah, thank you. But
okay, and for that one, you get doctor point. No, still 4-1 to Alex. And final question number 10: the German city of Berlin is on the banks of which river?
Oh, no, it's in Paris, isn't it? I've been to Berlin.
You buzzed, so...
I have been to Berlin.
I know it's not, but I'm going to say the Danube.
No, it's not. That goes to Austria, doesn't it?
I know. But I needed to say something because I buzzed. Yes. So I just gave a little bit more river knowledge. Even though it's wrong.
It's really annoying. I have been there. I don't know, though.
Yeah, to be honest... It makes perfect sense. All major cities are on some kind of water source.
Yeah.
But I'd never thought about the fact that Berlin was on a river before.
Yeah.
But this river, I'll give you a clue to the name, a big clue. If you were to run amok and go and murder a load of people, you might be described as going on a killing...
Oh, yeah, the River Spree.
Yes, Martin, it's Spree. The River
Spree.
He didn't
buzz in, though, so...
Spree.
Well, then, the final score is 4-2 to Alex. Well, well done, Martin, for not being utterly demolished like I was last week.
Very good. That's a left-handed good. Shake. Weird. I'm left-handed, so it's fine.
It's a bit awkward for me, but okay. Don't worry about it.
Shall I ask you the bonus question just for fun?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, bonus question. Okay. Fingers on buzzers. It should be quite easy.
Mm.
You ready?
My thing's gone. Hang on a second. Uh-oh. Sorry.
Oh, no, I'm going to go ahead anyway.
Okay, go on.
What is the only mammal on Earth that can fly?
Oh, no, that was. I wasn't buzzing in. That was my thing.
Come on, that was the thing. That was a buzz.
The only mammal that can fly. I'm thinking, is it like a flying fox, like a bat?
So what's your answer?
Yeah, I'm saying flying fox.
Flying fox.
Yeah, it's a type of bat.
Okay.
I just imagine a fox with wings.
The answer is bat.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
Bat, obviously, has many types of bats. And they fly.
But that's the type of bat. Yeah, it's those...
Yeah.
Have you seen those ones? I think they're in, like, Australia. They're, like, massive, and they look like a dog with wings, pretty much.
I know the ones you mean. I was just kind of like, that's a very specific answer.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just imagining a fox with duct taped on wings.
So, well done, Alex is the victor yet again.
Very good.
This is an unbroken streak.
Robin,
we're going to have to come together next time. I think so.
And make sure that... and not give out silly clues about his favourite films.
That was... Okay, I can see that one. That was a bit...
That's a bit harsh.
Well, thank you, as always, for listening and for watching us on YouTube.
And we also have our bonus little piece on our Patreon. So if you haven't checked that out already, please head on over.
Yeah. Thank you for all of our Patreon supporters for supporting us. For as little as $1 a month, every penny, every cent really, really helps. And we're able to do all these videos thanks to you guys. So, as always, thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time.
See you later, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
big color, bigger savings. Sherwin-Williams Super Sale is here. Get 40% off paints and stains June 5th through the 11th with prices starting at $30.89. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.